Hey everybody, welcome to the Productivity Playground. I'm Justin Drager.
And I'm Tim Maggio.
Welcome everybody. Tim, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. The kids are back in school and my house is a little bit quieter. How are you doing, Justin?
Equally as well, because I've got two kids off at college. We've got one kid at home. We are in the home stretch. And right now, it's after hours. It's evening. And nobody's home but me and the dog.
Lucky you. I'm waiting for that doorbell to ring with the kids home.
In a way, this is let's talk a little bit about this podcast, because these are the hours, early morning, evening, alone. These are the key hours for creativity and productivity, which is sort of what this podcast is about. I feel like it might be easier to talk about what this podcast isn't and then talk about what it is, because some of the people listening to this might be coming from where they know us previously. And maybe we address this once and then we can sort of move on.
Justin, what is this show not?
Well, so I'm previously the president and CEO of NASFA, National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators, and I currently work at a higher education foundation. So my career has mostly been spent in the higher education space. And over there, I did a podcast called Off the Cuff, which is wholly owned by NASFA. And I did that podcast for like 6 or 7 years. I'm no longer on that podcast. I don't work for NASFA. And they're going to keep doing their thing. But this podcast is not about higher education. It is not about higher education finance. It is not about financial aid. Click. I just heard everybody. I just heard everybody switch off the podcast.
Well, not to make it more confusing, I currently still do work at NASFA. Oh, okay. And that's how Justin and I got to know each other. But we connected on this, you know, personal passion project to do something about productivity and creativity and how those things intersect. And I've worked in higher education for all of my career life. But, you know, we both have interests outside of higher education.
Yeah, so I always feel like there's this weird intersection I've been interested in it a long time, which is to be sick, you know, a high performer in whatever that is, athletics, art, entrepreneurship, being a C-suite executive. There's this intersection between approaching your work creatively and also productively. You can be the most productive person in the world, but lack all creativity, and you know, you'll sort of be a bit of a robot. On the other hand, you can be totally creative and not be productive at all, and you'll probably be fired because you'll be going in 20 million different directions, and you'll be brilliant, but you'll not get anything done. But there's this sort of space in between where I think that a lot of people strive to live. And that's the space I'm really interested in. And Tim, in talking to you, we've had several conversations where I think that's the space we're both sort of interested in.
Yeah, I think productivity, success, and creativity, it doesn't have to be coupled or attached to like money or financial success. There's a lot of folks who are doing really incredible things that really exhibit these traits.
So we're going to try to explore that. I'm excited to share that this is the first of many episodes that we've already got sort of in the can. We've talked to a lot of guests, really incredible guests, conversations with entrepreneurs who have built and sold companies for vast amounts of money, more money than I don't know about you, Tim, but probably more than you and I will ever see in our lives. We've got athletes who have made a name for themselves, both on and off the court, and creatives who have performed on global and national stages. We've got content creators and leaders who are out there like on TED stages. And we've got a lot of people out there who have sort of triangulated in this space. And we're going to try to learn what creativity and productivity lessons they can teach us. We're going to try to do it all in 20 to 30 minutes tops.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, this is gonna, and Productivity Playground, because part of this is creative and part of it is getting it done. We're going to spend the first part in recess. That'll be with Tim and I, where we're going to kind of play around with something that's in the news or something that's going on out there in the world. And then we'll jump into the sandbox with a guest, where we're going to spend roughly 10, 15, 20 minutes with somebody, one of those high performers out there, and see what we can extract from them and sort of a lessons learned. So let's jump right in. Tim, I want to jump into a Harvard Business Review article from 2024. So far in the month of August, this is one of the most read articles in the Harvard Business Review. It's called The New Rules of Executive Presence. It was published in the January-February print edition. The article takes a 10-year scan of what's important, at least according to the survey distributed across corporate America, to establish whether you can demonstrate, quote, executive presence. And it looks at executive presence along three categories: gravitas, strong communication skills, and the right appearance. And I know that last one's probably going to sound loaded, but it's a survey. So it's a survey out to corporate America with anybody with the title of director or above. And from these three categories, respondents broke down what most demonstrates in their minds value as quote unquote executive presence. And they've been doing this for a number of years. So they looked at like what rose to the top in 2012 and then what rose to the top in 2022. And you and I have sort of talked about this, but I think it demonstrates changes in like generational attitudes as more millennials have come into the workplace. Yeah. And you start to see baby boomers retiring. And my generation, Gen X, sort of caught in the middle.
I think that might be why it was so popular, because it's probably a little bit controversial.
Yeah, here, when it comes to, so for example, when you look at gravitas, that first category, in both 2012 and 2022, confidence and decisiveness ranked as the highest qualities that demonstrated gravitas. So no change there. But new in 2022, inclusiveness and respect for others ranked as third and fourth, as demonstrating the right type of gravitas needed for executive presence. Does that surprise you?
I would say no, it doesn't surprise me, because I think inclusiveness is in, and people are wanting people to be respectful and are no longer kind of tolerating bad attitudes in the workplace, whether you're their coworker or whether they're your boss. So it might surprise some people, because I think there is, like, in the media out there, there's this, this notion of anti-DEI efforts and whatnot. But I mean, there's a lot of surveys out there that say that, you know, companies are still investing in DEI practices and inclusive practices. So to me, it's no surprise that this is still important.
I think the attitude that's going away here is the reliance on hard power, which is, I am your boss, and because I said so. It's almost like your parents.
Right.
I'm your parent, and because I said so. That sort of parenting only goes so far. It's sort of fear-based parenting. It's also fear-based managing. I'm your boss, and I said so is hard power. And what's in is soft power.
Yeah.
That's the sort of gravitas people are looking for, which is, I still want decisiveness. I still want leaders that make a decision and say, this is the way we go. But they also want people to check in with all the stakeholders and feel heard.
Don't be a jerk.
That's right. Yeah. But still be decisive. Right. When it comes to communication, superior speaking skills and command of a room / Zoom rose to the top for both 2012 and 2022. But listen to learn ranked third for 2022. And this is the one that I appreciated and yet scratched my head at. Authenticity shot to the top five for the very first time in 2022. What do you make of authenticity?
I think it's, you know, this notion of allowing people to be truly who they are, like people having, you know, dyed blue hair at work, being able to be open with their different, you know, identities and who they present as, and really be able to bring all that to work and people not be like, we don't talk about that in the workplace. Like, being able to be your whole self around people is just truly freeing. And I'm not surprised, because it probably makes people feel like they want to work harder, or at least be productive with each other on a team.
Do you think that's a generational shift?
It might be. I mean, when I think about my generation, I think, you know, there's definitely...
And to be clear, your generation is...
I am on the younger side of the millennial generation. Okay. I'm not quite Gen Z. So yes, my generation, as I speak for all of them, I think authenticity is something that, you know, is really, you know, talked about quite a bit, especially when I was in college. But when I think about like elementary school and middle school and high school, like no way were we talking about that. So I definitely think like in my early 20s, that's when I really started to notice this becoming important, but not just so important. It's something that almost became a need for people.
When I was coming up in, as Gen X, coming up in the business world, It was very much, and this also comes out in the appearance, the third category. A polished look remained at the top of both 2012 and 2022, so being polished. However, what polish meant obviously had changed quite a bit from 2012 to 2022, because in 2012, authenticity was nowhere in the appearance category. But in 2022, being authentic in your appearance rose to number two on the list. And dropping off from 2012 entirely was, quote, dressing for your next job. I can't tell you how many times I heard as a piece of advice coming up, dress for the job you want, not for the job you have. And I think maybe two things happened here. One, we had the pandemic, and particularly in quote unquote white collar work. A lot of folks stayed home during the pandemic, worked from home, and started adopting casual wear. And number two, we had a lot of millennials start coming into the workplace where being authentic, still polished, okay? So I guess polished maybe being the opposite of not being sloppy.
Yeah.
polished, but being authentic to yourself. And now I see, listen, I am not at the forefront of fashion. I don't know if that's having worked.
I don't know that I am either. Okay, well, were you going to say no?
But I will say that the number of ads that I get on social media for companies like Untuck It and more casual, but yet polished sort of wear is definitely on the rise, and people trying to find their personal brand, I think being authentic, polished, more casual is definitely what I notice, even in DC, which is a very buttoned up city.
Yeah. I mean, you see that new normal style of dress too. And I think like when I'm looking on TikTok or Instagram and just kind of doing my doom scrolling, like you see like those trendy companies and like people are in the clothes that they would wear on a Saturday, you know? So I think there's something to be said about being able to just like wear whatever makes you feel good about yourself at work. And I don't know. I do think it's interesting though, that we still have like fitness, vigor, authenticity, and polished look, because when I'm thinking about these things together, I'm like, they're a little bit of like controversial in my mind, because if you're thinking about authenticity and a polished look and fitness and vigor, it's like, you know, there's still this need for, you know, your leader or that person that we're talking about to kind of have this look.
The caricature of the executive or...
Yeah. And it almost kind of feels like it's pseudo attractiveness is what they're really saying there. And it's just, you know, so I think that's still important to people, because I think, you know, when you look at somebody and they have that kind of that typical attractiveness that people might see in magazines and whatnot, even though we're seeing more diversity in those folks, it probably still has an impact on our psyche.
I like that observation. It'll be interesting to see how this continues to change as we start to see the C-suite continue to evolve and change and become more diverse. I think what I like about this is I've always been a more dressed down type of person. And in terms of executive presence, I'd say if all of this is leading to more content, more substance, and less superficiality, then I'm all for it. Well, that's our recess, Tim. Let's jump into the sandbox. I'm excited because today we're thrilled to welcome Greg Scoresby, someone I've known for a long time. He's the founder and managing partner of Phoenix Ventures, today one of Arizona's most active and early stage software investment companies. Greg's no stranger to innovation. Way before the .com sort of rise and then crash, Greg had launched a series of companies, but before launching PHX Ventures, he founded Campus Logic, which is where I met him, a company that transformed the student financial aid experience for millions of students and institutions across the country, making it easier, more transparent. And under his leadership, Campus Logic became one of Arizona's fastest growing software companies. And then it was acquired by Ellucian. So welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, and thanks for the great introduction. I'm going to ask you to be my hype man.
Yeah, I'm pretty expensive, so just think about that. Well, listen, what We sort of wanted to invite you on here because you've done so much and you sort of have this balance, it seems like, figured out between being creative enough to have sort of this vision, think outside the box about problems that are persistent, but then also having sort of this persistent productivity grind to get a lot of things done. So I'm sort of wondering what role creativity plays in your work as an entrepreneur and an investor. Is this all numbers for you, or do you look for something else outside of that?
Well, gosh, there's a lot of places to go with that. Let me start on my entrepreneurial journey, because that's probably a little more tangible to this topic here. But I think smart, capable, ambitious people can do a lot of things. And I think the trick is for most of us on the productivity and creativity juxtaposition here is, how do you limit the things that you focus on? So this, I think smart, capable people usually, because they can, end up doing, like trying to do too much. And so at Campus Logic, my main question I would regularly ask my team was, what would happen if we didn't do this thing this quarter? And so I think relentless focus and prioritization is really what is the unlock to productivity. There's a natural inclination to do more, and when in fact, I think most of the time we should be doing fewer things.
So especially with like creative people, it's always thinking about the branches, what we could branch off and do this, we could branch off and do that. But sort of the flip side of that is like, what if we stayed focused on this and just really solved this issue?
Yeah, and I think you have to have, if you're a leader in this context, I think you have to have people around you who help both. You don't want to stifle creativity and say, hey, let's stop with the ideation here so we can just do this one thing. That's definitely not what I'm saying. But if I did anything right at Campus Logic, it was to build a team that was open to ideation and creativity while regularly deprioritizing new things so that we could focus on one thing this quarter or this year. So it's a combination of, I think, just relentless prioritization or ruthless prioritization coupled with having a team that can be both long-term and short-term thinking, sometimes in the same, the same conversation. And that those people are harder to find, I think, than maybe a lot of people realize.
I had a quote read back to me just today, actually, in a meeting that was, the person who chases two rabbits loses both. Sort of the same idea that you've got to pursue one thing. So let's say right now at Phoenix Ventures, where you invest in startups or early startups, you have an entrepreneur that's in front of you looking for early investment. They've got something that they're building. They want to build it to scale. You have someone in front of you who's a creative, a visionary, or you have someone who's leaning hard into productivity. Just the amount of stuff that they've built, they are relentless. They execute. Where do you lean into here? Are you looking for the visionary, or are you looking for the person who can get it done? Or are you going to tell me both?
I'm definitely going to tell you both, but here's the nuance for it. I've been around a lot of successful founders, people who have started particularly software companies. But what I really tried to start with was, what's one problem today that we can focus on today and solve this problem for a known customer today? And so I think that's the trick, is I always want to talk to founders who have a big vision, but also the ability to, oh, what's possible, but also the ability to say, hey, I've talked to 20 customers and they're all asking me for this one thing, and I'm going to go execute this one thing. I'm going to build a product to solve this problem for them. And then after that, I think there's some other problems we can solve, but I want to start with this one problem. And I don't want to stop on this one problem until I get it right. But the companies that fail usually fail for a lack of focus, not market opportunity in my experience.
How unique is it to find that person?
Well, I would say it's unique. I'm talking about, in my context, I'm talking about venture scale companies, people that can build companies that are 100 million in revenue or more, is what I would describe. And so, first of all, there's just not that many of those companies that get built. So it's inherently small with that. But having said that, I think it's easy for people to hear a statement like that and think, that's not me, or somehow this guy's saying that there's just not that many people like this. But I think these are learned attributes. I think you can learn to be more creative and more focused at the same time, and more about productivity. So these are skills like anything else that people can learn and develop. I don't think these are innate characteristics, maybe partially, but said another way, they just haven't been learned yet.
When you're developing a team around you, whether that was at a previous company or even today, when you're advising founders, you have a financial stake in their company and they're looking to you for advice on scaling up a team, how do you advise them in terms of building out space, like literally space, so that they can think creatively? They can think about their next steps beyond the immediacy of what needs to get done today or tomorrow.
I think I've tried hard to be introspective and get to know myself a little more, strengths, weaknesses, and try to be self-aware. Having said that, the people that are always the least self-aware think that they're self-aware. So that's the paradox of self-awareness. So maybe I'm one of those people. At Campus Logic, we struggled with product in the early days. And what I wanted to find was a partner who could help, who had higher education experience, who had cloud software experience specifically, and who had the ability to help get early product to market with high level of quality and a high level of performance. And I also wanted my creative ideas to be heard and appropriately throttled. So Chris Chumley was this guy for me that he came on right when we were really first into revenue, and he really put so much discipline on the business. But I never once felt like I wasn't heard. We never once, for working 9 years together or so, or 8 years together, we never once had a scheduled one-on-one. We talked multiple times a day. And I always felt like I was heard. And he would say, that's not something we're going to fit into like this unless you tell me this is the most important thing to do right now. And we would debate those things. So I was happy to surround myself with people that would, for lack of a better word, throttle me. But it doesn't mean that they would say no all the time. But I wanted someone who could help in the creativity, but also put discipline and drive to productivity. Because I'm given more to ideas and more to creation, probably more than execution. I love execution, but if I were going to err on one side, I'm probably more on the idea generation than the execution would be, and I value both. So that was one. And then when I started Phoenix Ventures, I have a business background. I did an MBA, so I'm a business guy, and I built a successful software company, and I've been around startups a lot. But there is a next level discipline that comes if you're in something like investment banking, for example. So I found a partner, a guy named Jeff Kerr, who wanted to move back to Phoenix to join me. And so I hired him because he applies a level of financial rigor that he's been trained on that's way, way deeper than what I'm capable of myself. So those are two examples where I've tried to identify weaknesses. Yeah, or things where I'm less strong, I would say, and try to find people that's their superpower, and then also someone that we can collaborate in, or debate and intellectually spar, so that we can get the best outcome. So I think being honest about who you are, being self-aware of who you are, and then supplementing those skills with whether you kind of lean toward one side or the other, and go supplement your team with people that can fill in your weaknesses.
So, Greg, I'm hearing you say you like to lean a little bit more into the creativity, but you'll find balance in your team to sort of offset some of the numbers or some of the throttle or focus or efficiencies that allow you to maybe even lean more heavily into creativity because you know you have a check and a balance on the other side.
Definitely true. So I regularly ask founders that we back, hey, what's your calendar look like? So at Campus Logic, and this was a huge hack for me, I moved all my one-on-ones to Mondays. I would allow no other recurring meetings on any other day other than Monday. And so from a productivity standpoint, I wanted to get all the information about what was going on in the business all at once. So that was everything from individual one-on-ones to team meetings that I was part of, to my full leadership, to the executive team meeting. And that's kind of, and company meetings where I would talk to the whole company every other week. Those were all stacked on Mondays. So it made for long days, but it also gave me a lot of data all at once in the same context. And so there wasn't so much, switching cost that happens when you mentally switch from task to task. So the cognitive load, I think, is lighter of that. And that allowed for Tuesdays and Thursday mornings, in particular, for years to have nothing scheduled. And that was a huge hack for me. And some of those things were, it wasn't idle time. It was super valuable time. But I would always have ideas about a new product, a new strategy, a new feature, hey, I ought to spend more time with this customer. I feel like I need to spend more time giving this customer some love. So some of it's just making room for those ideas to come into your mind and in your life it's easy to let tasks fill up your calendar. And so by creating artificial constraints, I'm not going to have recurring meetings beyond Mondays. It doesn't mean I didn't have meetings other days, but if they were recurring meetings, they had to be on Mondays. So anyway, that was one thing I did that was helpful to me.
Yeah, it's sort of like time segmenting, but in the extreme for you. You segmented Mondays as your load day, and then you created space to have unstructured time. Some people feel like guilty about that, like, well, I have unstructured time. But the idea, it sounds like for you, was that unstructured time was to sort of free think and then explore ideas as they came to you. And that led to new products, service ideas, or customer attention thoughts that allowed you to strengthen the product line or service line.
Yes, on all that. And some of it's even can be personal things or, as an example, like I think journaling is a hugely undervalued skill. So some of this could be gratitude journaling. If you're ever not happy in your life and you want to be happier, gratitude is a pretty good mechanism to do that. So, writing down the things you're thankful for in a journal can be really valuable for that. Also, there are times when my kids were little where I would think, hey, which of my kids needs a little extra time? Because it's easy to let company building just be all consuming. And so I write those things down in a journal. So I don't think productivity is limited to work or creativity is limited to work. So I want my relationships to be productive. And by productive, I mean like healthy. I don't mean just like valuable to me. I mean valuable to both of us. And so those things take time and planning like anything else. So I think making time for unstructured time has huge personal benefits as well, like I mentioned.
If I were to ask you, like, what's the one productivity secret or habit that you most rely on? What's the secret sauce? What would it be?
I would say narrow focus and increase intensity. And I took that line from Frank Slootman. He wrote a book called Amp It Up, which I think it's a really short book, a really quick read, but that there's the underlying premise in all the chapters is narrow the focus and increase intensity. It's very hard to increase intensity in your personal effort and your leadership effort if you don't have focus. But if you can get yourself and your team narrowly focused on a set of objectives within a week, within a month, within a quarter, then it allows you to go hard after those objectives and keep people focused and increase intensity on the one or two items that are imperatives for like for the near term. And to me, that's the hack, is narrow the focus and increase intensity.
Greg Scoresby, founder and managing partner of Phoenix Ventures, Arizona's most active early stage software investor. Greg, to future of creative and productive work for you in attracting many more $100 million companies to the Phoenix area. Good luck to you. Thanks for coming on.
We've reached the end of another productivity adventure. Now, before you go back to your to-do list, subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you can find podcasts. Make sure you sign up for the coming newsletter and make sure you follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at Productivity Playground Podcast. Share it with a friend, and we promise to keep bringing you the most productive content out there. Thanks again to Greg, and make sure you follow him on LinkedIn, where he puts out a lot of great content.